Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that sound means it's time for the weekend wrap. Greetings, Joseph, and how are you doing this evening?
Well, I tell you what, brother, it's been a really interesting weekend, but, you know, I'm just really thankful that we've got boxing back, man, on the big stage. My goodness, it's been a very tough August to endure. James, I can't remember when there's been a longer month of inactivity for boxing. Can you?
No, I tell you what, you know, like you said, it has been a stretch. But, you know, I want to take you out of the usual format here, Joe, because two things happened this week, and I want your impressions on both of them. The first one was Mr. Suleiman reinstating David Haye. What did you think about that?
Quite honestly, man, that is at the bottom of my list. And one of the reasons why is probably because he's one of the only heavyweights that can make money. It's pretty obvious, especially with Vitali Klitschko seemingly on his last lap. I mean, what other heavyweights are going to be able to make money? David Haye is still a young man. Whether he says, you know, he's going to, whether or not he's going to stay true to his, you know, his promise and retire, I doubt it, seriously. And, you know, if he continues to fight, there are very few heavyweights that actually can pull in that kind of revenue. I mean, you know, what motivates the WBC ever? It's always money, brother. You know that, man. So that to me is not surprising. Jose Suleiman and WBC, whatever's going to make that sanctioning body money, that's what motivates their decision making. Make no mistake about it. So I'm sorry, what other, before we actually get into this weekend's action, what other issues, man, were you mulling over?
Well, you know, once again, the rumors are flying about Manny's looking for a manager. Freddie doesn't have time. I mean, you know, now this is just the second time that this, well, I guess for the second month we've been hearing this. Do you think there's really any truth to this?
So you're talking about Amir Khan looking for a new trainer?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because, yeah, what you said was Manny looking for a manager, and that's two totally separate things. But Amir Khan looking for a trainer, absolutely. You know, this is one thing that always really chaps me, man. When we talk about boxing and we talk to fighters, it's always the trainer that gets way too much of the blame when a fighter loses. Well, when a fighter wins, for that matter, as well. The trainer gets way too much of the credit and way too much of the blame, and especially at this level. Amir Khan, this is a guy who, I guess the biggest plus, the biggest thing that Freddie has really brought to the table in training Amir Khan has been the mentality. He's made him a really confident fighter. Amir Khan already had the offensive skills. He already had the natural athleticism. He already had the amateur pedigree. Freddie Roach really didn't have to teach him very much. This is a guy who just had to put it together mentally, had to build more confidence, and obviously he's got some work to do because he's blaming now a trainer for his last two losses. oh, well, I need someone to hold my hand and be with me throughout the entire training process. I need someone who's going to be with me throughout camp, and I don't want to have to share duties. That's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. Well, then you better get a trainer that isn't a name that you've never heard of before. Dude, then give up thinking about Manny Stewart, Ronnie Shields, Joe Goosen, Freddie Roach, Robert Garcia. Don't even think about any of those guys, because guess what? Those guys have so many fighters in their stables. If you want someone to be there at your beck and call and hold your hand, then you better forget about getting a big-name trainer. It's absolute rubbish, and I'm sick to death of hearing it. You know, all of these fighters, man, blaming their shortcomings, you know, and there's nothing to blame. There's nothing. I mean, you look at Amir Khan's last fight. He got caught with a good shot. It happens sometimes in boxing, guys. It happens. So, you know, honestly, I'm tired of hearing about it. Amir Khan, you know, but I tell you what, James Gogi is going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, in the third half-hour portion of the show. When James comes and visits with us, he's going to break down and give it to us once and for all what Amir Khan's deficiencies actually are, what he feels a trainer needs to work on, and who would be right for the job. So that's very good that you actually brought that up. But you know what I would like to actually talk about the most, James, and what the most pressing topic is tonight, is all of the fight action that we had this past weekend. And the big winners, Daniel Gill, Gennady Golovkin, and Mikey Garcia. Those three guys looked fabulous. Daniel Gill, you know, he was in a very close bout. We'll start with that one first because that happened first. At least from our neck of the woods, it happened first. It was in Germany. And it was a unification bout. Daniel Gill was the IBF middleweight title holder. Felix Sturm was the WBA title holder, middleweight title holder. And you know what, guys? Most people actually considered Felix Sturm to be the favorite going into this fight. And I'm going to ask you, why, James? Why do you think that was?
Well, I think it was because of some of the decisions that we've seen him get. I mean, you know, especially in a close fight. And I'll admit, I was really one of the detractors. I really thought, you know, going into Germany fighting Sturm, you know, this is an automatic L on your record. You know, and like I said, I think it was because of some, you know, I mean, hey, I have to really give the judges, not only the judges, but the fans. I mean, this fight was spot on. It could have went either way, and they got their money's worth, and they accepted the decision as true boxing fans and not homers.
Yeah, you know, credit to both fighters for, first of all, taking this fight, because it's ultimately up to the fighters. Fighters are the ones who actually have to say, okay, I want this fight, I don't want this fight. Credit to both guys for actually making this fight happen. Credit to Daniel Gill for having the brass to go into Germany on a Sturm promotional card and taking on the hometown favorite. Now, you're absolutely right. He was the favorite because of this. But, you know, credit to the judges for actually calling it like they saw it. And, you know, I didn't envy their job watching this fight. This is a very difficult fight to score. And I'll tell you why, James. Because there were very few actual exchanges in this fight. Now, what I mean by that is when both guys trade, okay, that's an exchange in boxing. Neither guy was really willing to open up while the other guy was punching. That always makes for a very, very tough fight to score, unless one guy is just doing all the damage and one guy is just, you know, applying all the pressure and letting his hands go. But both guys were actually taking turns, actually letting their hands go. But neither fighter, neither Gill nor Sturm, were willing to actually take very many chances in this fight. And they weren't willing to let their hands go while the other was. It made for a very, very tough fight to score. So whenever that happens, you usually have to favor the fighter who is letting their hands go or go more often. Unless his opponent is doing the obvious, more damaging, impactful, throwing the more impactful, consequential punches, like in last week's fight with Arthur Abraham and Robert Stieglitz. And that was pretty much the case with that fight as well. You know, and that's what happens when you have two, I guess, fighters who fight in a European style. They don't like to take chances and let their hands go while their opponent's actually firing. You know, I tell you what, Danny Garcia, if he had that mentality, Amir Khan would still be holding the belt. Because Danny Garcia, okay, this is a guy who takes risks. This is a guy who's going to take one on the chin just to unload his brand of punishment. And we absolutely love him for it. And he has a huge knockout on his resume as a result. Guys, I mean, could you imagine if either Gill or Sturm had elected to actually open up and take some chances? Oh my gosh, we would have maybe witnessed fight of the year yesterday. But see, it was a good fight. It was still a very good fight where both guys didn't want to concede. It was a very good fight. But could you imagine if Sturm or Gill had actually gone outside their comfort zone and elected to try and trade and throw exchanges and really put themselves in harm's way and decide to, okay, I'm going to take a chance and I'm going to let my hands go and I'm going to try to counter this guy over top of his jab. Or when he's letting his hands go and he's ripping me to the body, I'm going to say, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to try to go for the knockout and land something big. Could you imagine if he did something like that? But no, that's not in their nature. That's not in their mental makeup. Neither one of those guys. And that's what we see from a lot of European-type fighters. I know Gill's from Australia, but he still has that mentality where he's going to cover up if his opponent is letting his hands go. So what dictated the outcome of that fight? Okay, you know, this was still a very tough fight to score because Sturm throws really just tight, compact shots. And he looks, I mean, he doesn't have an enormous amount of power at the 160-pound weight division, but he looks like he loads up on everything. He looks like he tries to have bad intentions behind every exchange or every combination that he throws. And, boy, when he sits down on that jab, it's absolutely beautiful, and he hooks off the jab really well. And whenever he fired it off, it was very effective. But he was only throwing like one, two punches at a time. Maybe doubling up on the jab, but he didn't throw as much in combination as Daniel Gill did. And quite honestly, I think that was the difference in the fight. Daniel Gill just pretty much outworked the guy, and he had one moment in the sun where he really hurt him at the end of the third round. I think it was pretty obvious he hurt him with like a right hook on the inside or an overhand right. It sent Felix Sturm back into the ropes. He looked like he was ostensibly hurt. And I think that's pretty much what decided. And it pretty much put in the minds of the judges that, hey, Gill has, you know, bigger stuff in his fists. He's throwing the much harder, more impactful shots after that. I think it really curbed the judgment of two of those judges. But, guys, we go to the final score. It obviously went the distance, went the 12 rounds. Two of the judges scored it 8-4 in favor of Daniel Gill. One of the judges still scored it 8-4 in favor of Felix Sturm. James, why the discrepancy there? Why 8-4? That's kind of a wide margin either way. Don't you think? Is
really,
it?
Really, really. I mean, you know, I can, you know, as the great Don Chargan always tells us, you know, like sometimes judges are shielded one way or the other. You can't see all the way around the ring and whatnot. But, you know, 8-4, you know, maybe 7-8. I don't understand how you can score completely, completely different than everyone else.
Yeah, 8-4. Wow, that's tough, man. I mean, it really is. 8-4. Is it really that wide of a margin, though? I mean, think about it. 8-4. That's only a two-round difference of a draw, after all. That's only 2-round difference of a draw. Is it really that hard to imagine? It's just a 2-round difference of 6-6. Either way, it seems a lot wider when you say, oh, 8-4, 116, 112. 4-point difference, that's ridiculous. Well, you just turn two of those rounds the other way, and it's a draw. 2-round swing from a draw, that's no big deal. That's no reason to get up in arms. And as close as this fight was in certain rounds, I could easily see it being either a draw, 7-5, or 8-4. But nothing like we saw, you know, in this year. I mean, nothing like we've seen this year. Oh, 117, 111 one way. You know, 118, 110 one way. I mean, that's ridiculous. But 8-4, yeah, it's only a 2-round swing from a draw. So that's fine with me. Honestly, I'll tell you what was most impressive. One, both guys really showed up to fight, and it was a really great unification bout. I would have loved to have seen either fighter take more chances and try to let their hands go when the other was, you know, trying to actually trade or exchange. You know, I'd like to see more exchanges. Not just one guy covering up while the other was letting his hands go. You know, I would have liked to have seen more of that, but I was really impressed with both fighters' reactions after the fight. Both men seemed very humbled, like they weren't sure if they had won the fight. Didn't you get that impression, James?
Well, you know, I thought that was, again, you know, part of the competitive nature of the fight and how close the fight was, you know, where, you know, you didn't have one guy doing somersaults across the ring. And, you know, I really felt it was, you know, it showed the competitive nature and how they both felt that they had given their best.
Yeah, you know, I was very impressed with that. And Felix Sturm said, you know, I lost the fight. I have to live with it. You know, I guess I have to live with this decision. I really hope I get a rematch. Well, if you hope, you know, if you hope to get a rematch, why on earth didn't you actually accept a rematch, have a rematch clause in the contract? Because guess what? From what we're hearing from Gary Shaw's camp is that there's no rematch clause. So if you weren't willing to give Daniel Gill a rematch when you thought you were going to win, do you honestly think Gill is going to give Felix Sturm a rematch now that he won and he's the unified champ? Honestly, I tell you what, if I were Gill, I'd say, okay, I'll give you a rematch, brother, but we have to fight in Sydney. We have to fight in Australia, brother. No more fighting in Germany, man. You're going to have to come over to my neck of the woods and let's see how well you do. Tell you what, you better let your hands go a little bit more or else you have no chance in Australia. Hang it up, brother. But I tell you what, I did love this fight. I would have liked to have seen them let their hands go a little bit more in exchange. I would have liked to have seen them trade a little bit more, take more chances. I think it would have been one hell of a fight because of both guys' mental makeup. Both guys had the mentality of champions, but I would like to see them take chances more, just like Gennady Golovkin did last night against Proska. What a performance by Gennady Golovkin. If you didn't know it before last night, guys, Gennady Golovkin is a stone-cold killer, man. This guy has dynamite in both fists, and I'm sorry, he's a beast. I'm going to say this right now, guys. If Daniel Gill or Felix Sturm, either one of those guys, tries to step in the ring with Gennady Golovkin, they're getting knocked out, period. They're getting knocked out. Gennady Golovkin not only has technical skill, not only has a very good chin, not only is a very strong mental fighter, but this guy has sledgehammers in his hands. Did you see the way every single time he touched up Pruska, Pruska looked like his world was going to end? Wasn't that sick? I mean, he looked like he would just touch him with the left hand and he would just crumble. And this is a guy that's got a good chin. Tell me, James, you weren't thoroughly impressed with Gennady Golovkin.
Well, it was the first time I had seen him, and, you know, I mean, other than the accolades that you had given him, I really wasn't familiar with him at all. And it was evidently his opponent wasn't either, because, like you said, every time he touched him, he cringed. It was almost like one of those cartoon fights. You know, it looked like one of the old 1947 fights where the guy, you know, you hit him to the body and the guy kind of cringes a little bit. You hit him again.
Oh my goodness!
It was a perfect old boxing move.
Well, you know what's funny is. Yeah, we actually met him in with Abel Sanchez, his trainer, down in Temecula, California, a couple weeks ago. Actually, I guess about a month ago now. He was there, you know, with his buddy, the schoolboy, Walter Sarnoy. Both guys are signed to K2 Promotions. Both guys train out in Big Bear. And he was there supporting his buddy, Walter Sarnoy, the schoolboy, and he was talking about his upcoming fight, and Abel Sanchez told me that night, he goes, dude, look out. Wait till September 1st. This guy in sparring, he spars everybody. Alfredo Angulo, Canelo Alvarez, he spars everyone up at Big Bear, and he only gives them about 50-60% in sparring. And why? Because he would absolutely murder everybody if he didn't hold back. So I was really looking forward to seeing how Gennady Golovkin fought on September 1st. My goodness, this guy has sledgehammers in his hands, and I'm going to say it, this guy's the class of 160. The only fighter I see competing with Gennady Golovkin right now, at this time at 160, is Sergio Martinez. I think if Chavez Jr. fights because of the style matchup, if Chavez Jr. tries to face a guy like Gennady Golovkin, he's going to get knocked out. He's going to get ripped to shreds. There's no way he can handle, I mean, unless he has this, unless he has this fable-like chin, this, you know, unbelievable chin, which he very well might. We've never seen him really hurt in a fight. But he's got his, you know, I wouldn't want to test that chin against a guy like Gennady Golovkin. And Junior has so many holes in his defense that, no, there's no way I don't think he could last against a world-class puncher like Gennady Golovkin. The only guy who I think could compete with Golovkin would be Sergio Martinez. But it's going to be interesting to see if – now, what I thought was interesting was after the fight he stated – hey, I'm really happy to be on HBO. I'm just really excited that I finally got the opportunity to, you know, showcase my skills. I want to fight anyone at 154, 160, or 168. What did you think about that, James? The prospect of him fighting at 168 pounds, Gennady Golovkin, at 5'10", do you think he could compete at 168?
You know, that's a very interesting, because one of the first guys who came to my mind as soon as he said that was my old homie, Kelly Pavlik. And I'm thinking, you know, it's like, you know what I'm
You know what, dude? Oh, my gosh. That would be an amazing fight. You know what, James? Sign it up, brother. I want to see it. Kelly Pavlik or Carl Froch versus Gennady Golovkin. I'm all over that fight, brother. I want to see it. Sign it up. Because, you know, when I met Kelly Pavlik when he was in San Antonio, I shook his hand, and this guy has bricklayer hands. Oh, my gosh. It's almost like one of those – he's got old Clint Eastwood hands. One of those old man's hands that are just all bone. It's just solid. It's like if he pats you on the back, you're going to feel it for a couple days. Kelly Pavlik has bone-crushing hands. And, dude, I would love to see that fight with Gennady, man. You know, dude, we should get your promoter's license, man. That's a great fight. That is a great fight, man. I would love to see Gennady Golovkin. Because, honestly, I don't think anyone at 160 is going to touch this guy. Except maybe our boy, Sergio Mora. He's already stated that he wants to fight Gennady Golovkin. He wants to prove himself against the best. And I'd love to see if, you know, he can actually survive Gennady Golovkin. But I tell you what, before we actually speak with Ronnie Shields in about 4 or 5 minutes, I'd also like to talk about how awesome Mikey Garcia looked yesterday. Holy schmoly, man. I mean, this kid is ready. I don't see why they're holding this guy back. Mikey Garcia just put a licking on poor Mauricio Pastrana in the second round. Yeah, Mauricio Pastrana is what, 60? But still, I mean, he really put his lights out with one big right hand. And honestly, I'm tired of seeing Mikey Garcia fight trajectory opponents. I want to see him fight the best. Hurry up already, Top Rank. I want to see him fight Orlando Salido. Could you imagine that fight, James? Orlando Salido versus Mikey Garcia. Now, you know, I would love to see him fight the winner of Johnny Gonzalez and Ponce de Leon or Gary Russell Jr., but we know that's not going to happen because they're Golden Boy fighters. But wouldn't you love to see Mikey Garcia versus Orlando Salido? Mikey Garcia is a very, very brilliant defensive fighter. A guy who has a sharp, crisp economy of punches, very smart. You know, he doesn't waste any shots. Pinpoint accuracy, you know, thunder in his right hand, very good lead left also, hooks off the jab very well. But a guy with the output and who throws bombs like Orlando Salido, that's a matchup that I want to see. I would love to see that fight, but congratulations to Mikey Garcia, who maintains his undefeated record, 29-0, with 21 knockouts. But Mikey, it's time, brother. You're ready. No more Mauricio Pastrana's. No more of this, man. I want to see him fight someone who is at the upper echelon of the featherweight division. It's time. Come on now. We deserve it as fight fans. But I tell you what, so far, thus far, you can't argue with the job that Top Rank and Robert Garcia is doing, guiding his career, cultivating this future world champion. And it's pretty obvious he's going to be a future world champion. I mean, he just looks outstanding. But it's going to be interesting to see if he fights Orlando Salido. It's going to be interesting to see if he can take some of that power, if he can actually get the better of a guy who likes to let his hands go on a regular basis and who has a pretty darn good chin. It's going to be very interesting to see. But congratulations to the three big winners yesterday, Daniel Gill, Gennady Golovkin, and Mikey Garcia. They looked absolutely tremendous. I love Daniel Gill's heart. He showed a lot of heart and mental toughness. And, you know, congratulations for Felix Sturm, man, for actually giving him everything he could handle. But, you know, Felix, in order to get past these guys, you're going to have to start taking some chances. You're going to have to start letting your hands go when these guys actually let your hands go. I mean, look at, like I said in the beginning of the show, look at Danny Garcia. He would have never beaten Amir Khan had he not been willing to take chances in the ring and exchange with the favored fighter, the guy who had threw the higher volume of punches. He knew he wasn't going to win unless he decided to let his hands go and take some chances in the center of the ring. Well, Felix, if you want a future in the middleweight division, if you want to continue boxing, you're going to have to start letting your hands go and taking more chances when your opponent begins to open up. And that's my final thought on that fight. But, guys, coming up, we do have legendary fight trainer Mr. Ronnie Shields, who actually just had the grand opening of his gym, his new training facility in Sugarland, Texas. Plex Gym, powered by Ronnie Shields. We'll talk to him briefly about that. He's got a couple of big fights coming up. It's going to be very interesting to hear his thoughts on Mr. Edwin Rodriguez, who's going to be featured on the Pugilist Corner this coming up Tuesday. James, is Mr. Ronnie Shields on the line yet?
Yes, he is. Introductions, please.
Very good. Guys, it is always an honor to speak with this gentleman, one of the best ambassadors of the sport today, legendary fight trainer and elite-level boxing coach, Mr. Ronnie Shields. Ronnie, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, I'm just really happy that August is over and done with. My goodness. Was that the longest month that we've ever had to endure without any quality boxing action? I think the high point of August was your fight in San Antonio, man.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think it was.
I think that was the biggest event that we experienced in August, man. My goodness. Well, I tell you what, we've got a lot of really great things to cover. And you look on the boxing calendar, next weekend is going to be so packed, it's sick. I mean, we've got so many events to talk about and to cover, I don't even know where to begin. But let's start with the opening of your new training facility. And it's Plex Gym, right? Powered by Ronnie Shields. Is that what the name of it is?
Yes. It's Plex Boxing, powered by Ronnie Shields.
Very good. And this is a state-of-the-art facility. And with your conditioning, your special conditioning coach, Mr. Danny Arnold as well, correct?
Absolutely. You know, Danny Arnold, he's the owner of the gym. And, you know, him and I have, you know, we combined, so we are going to be, you know, business partners now. And, you know, we're going to have so many things that we're going to be doing at Plex. And it's going to really, really be great, man. And, you know, we had the grand opening on this past Saturday. We had a lot of people come, and, I mean, it was just great, man. I thought she was going to show up. I'm waiting on you,
Joe. Oh, well, unfortunately, we had I just started a new radio show in San Antonio Saturday morning. So, yeah, unfortunately, I had to attend to that. But my apologies, man. I really wanted to be there. But our story is coming out covering this gym.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be out on East Side Boxing this week. So look for it, guys.
All right.
I had to plug my stuff there, man. But it's actually generated from an interview that you did on the Pugilist Corner a couple weeks ago with Danny Arnold. And that's pretty much what the story is going to be on. But it's going to be out this week, guys, publicizing his state-of-the-art training facility. So I heard all your fighters were there, brother.
Everybody was there, you know, and all the people enjoyed meeting them. And, you know, and matter of fact, on Tuesday, HBO is coming down. They're going to do something on Mike Lee, just a small thing on Mike Lee, because he's going to open up the pay-per-view for Chavez Jr. and Sergio Martinez. And we're going to have a lot of media here from Houston. They're going to come, and everybody's heard about the gym, so they're all excited. They want to come and check out the gym also. So we're looking forward to it.
Wow, you know, that's exactly what this area needs. And from what I can gather, I think this is one of a kind in Texas, isn't it? I don't think there's another training facility that has, well, Ronnie Shields, but also the conditioning expertise of Danny Arnold. I mean, I think this is one of a kind in Texas, right?
Yes, I believe so. You know, because the gym does offer, you know, have a bunch of physical therapists there, and I mean, just, you know, it's just so great, man. You know, the guys are like in seventh heaven. There's one time I can't get the guys to leave the gym. You know, I mean, it's really unbelievable because they come in the mornings. You know, like before their training time, they come in, they get iced down, they get stressed out. You know, they go through their warm up, then they come to the boxing, they do their boxing, they spar and all everything, and then normally after sparring and everything, you know, you'd be sore. You know, you'd be aching, your muscles be aching, everything, and they go back over to the physical therapist, and what they do is they ice them down again, stretch them out again, and, you know, then these guys go and come back so fresh the next day, and, you know, they just, I mean, you know, these guys, they want to train now, you know. I mean, they're really excited about training because they feel that they have, you know, everything at their, that's right in front of them, you know, everything is there for them. And these guys are really training hard. And, you know, I mean, I just feel so good about it, man. They feel great about it. Danny Arnold feels great about it. You know, we just have good feelings about this whole situation. And now, you know, when it's time for a fight, hey, you know, I mean, I worry all the time about the fighters, you know. But, you know, but I'm just feeling more and more confident about everything right now.
Absolutely, and that's one of the factors that you actually touched on, where this, you know, the potential here is limitless, Ronnie. I mean, because in the past, we know you've had fighters that have had trouble coming into, you know, camp overweight. Well, all you have to worry about with Danny Arnold's expertise and working with them on nutrition and overall health and keeping them in shape, all you have to worry about is implementing your fight strategy for their opponent. That's exciting, man. This is probably the first time since working with Evander Holyfield that you've had to worry about that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely, man. You know, and, you know, another thing about it now is we have cameras in the gym. So now after a sparring session, you know, I could take the guys in the back, you know, we can plug it up to one of the televisions that we have set up. You know, we have about 10 televisions set up, but we, you know, in different rooms and things, we can go in and we can sit down and, you know, and we can watch what, you know, everybody's doing, watch the mistakes that we're making, and go in and say, okay, here's what we did, and, you know, we need to change this or change that. And, I mean, you know, it's just unbelievable, man. And, you know, I did that the other day with Avenue Rodriguez and with Mike Lee. And it was so funny that I kept telling Edwin, you know, I kept saying, man, you know, this is something you're doing wrong. And he said, no, I didn't do that today. I said, okay. So, you know, I got with Danny Arnold. Danny said, come on, let's go in the back and look at it. So we went and we looked at it. And Edwin was like, oh, I did do that, you know. So now we have proof. Now it's just not me saying things. You know, they can see it for themselves. But, you know, but it's a tool that, you know, that I think everybody, you know, I know a lot of people that use, you know, that same tool already anyway. But, you know, it's just refreshing when you have it available to you to use, you know. So, you know, I'm excited about it. The guys are really excited about it. And we're just looking forward, man, to some great fights coming up.
Oh, absolutely, man. You know what? And again, we'll post that article this week on East Side Boxing. And guys, if you need any more information on the gym or on his facility, Ronnie, where do we actually get that information, brother?
Well, you know, if you go on Facebook, you can look up a Plex Performance on Facebook, or just go directly to the website, Plex. You know, and you'll see everything. Everything is there. You know, they even have pictures printed out and everything, and, you know, you could just get it from there.
Very good, guys. So we look forward to, you know, what's really exciting is I wonder how much global boxing talent is going to be attracted to this new gym and to your expertise. I mean, this is really exciting. You know, and this is exactly what the state of Texas actually needs. So we're really looking forward to seeing how wide and how much you actually grow with this facility, Ronnie. It's a very exciting time. But I tell you what's also exciting, brother. All of the bouts that are going to be taking place this coming up weekend, my goodness.
Absolutely.
It is
absolutely
about time, brother.
Well, you know,
oh, my goodness.
We had a particular break in August, but now, you know, now the ball is going to get rolling. Because, you know, we're coming to the close of the end of the year. So, you know, we're going to have a few months left. So everybody's, you know, shooting for position to get these good fights in.
Well, let me just rattle them off. I mean, these are the fights that are flying under the radar. Marco Antonio Rubio versus Carlos Baldemir. It's not even going to be televised.
Right.
Then you've got Vitaly Klitschko versus Manuel Char. This is a fight that has me curious, actually. Has a lot of questions surrounding it. Is Vitaly Klitschko, is his heart still in the fight game? Is his shoulder 100% repaired?
Right.
Is he going to retire after this title defense? And Manuel Char, undefeated heavyweight from Lebanon, this is a tough guy. This guy's serious. No, he hasn't fought anywhere near the level of Vitaly Klitschko. But this is an undefeated fighter.
And a big guy.
And a very big guy. You know, Ronnie, what are your thoughts on this matchup before we move forward, man?
Well, you know, I haven't seen much of Char, but I think Vitaly Klitschko, man, with the jab he has and the power that he has, it's going to be very difficult for anybody to beat this guy. I mean, the only way he's going to lose, I feel, is that if that shoulder really gives him so much trouble that, you know, he can't throw punches. I mean, that's the only way I see this guy losing. But, you know, but I really think, I think the time is coming that he's going to just say, you know what, it's time for me to go. You know, I think he wants to go out on top. You know, I don't blame him, you know, but I really think he's going to go out on top. I think this may be, you know, I'm going to say one more fight after this. If he wins this, if he gets by, I'll say he'll probably do one more fight, and then I think he'll retire.
You know, I think you might be right, and we spoke with Emmanuel Stewart last week, and he seems to think the exact same thing, that he sees Vladimir Klitschko competing for the vacated title sometime next year. So it's going to be interesting to see on the undercard, Ronnie, and this is a fight that I don't really like because I love Jamil. Jamil's a good guy. And honestly,
yeah,
I don't know if he should be fighting anymore. He's going up against undefeated heavyweight southpaw Mago Abdusalamov out of the Oxnard gym. I don't like this fight, Ronnie. Honestly, I mean, Jamil McClain, you know Jamil. He's a huge guy. He's half man, half mountain.
Yes.
But Mago, that guy can punch.
Yes, he can.
What
yes,
do you think? Do you think Jamil McClain should have taken this fight?
Well, you know, I don't know how much money they're paying him. I just hope it's worth it for him because undoubtedly he's going to get knocked out. I mean, you know, it's not a doubt in my mind that Jamil is going to get knocked out. You know, here's another guy who's fighting past his prime. You know, I mean, you know, at some point, you know, these guys, they retire, they come back. You know, these guys have got to be smart. They got to do like I did. I quit. You can't come back from a quit. You know, I never retired. I quit boxing. So these guys got to do it. They got to start quitting because every time they retire, they come back, you know. But Jamil, man, the nicest guy in the world. But, again, you know, he's trying to get lucky, had to get another shot. But he's chosen the wrong guy to get lucky with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this guy can punch.
That's right.
This guy can punch.
And he's a southpaw.
Absolutely. And this guy's no joke. I've seen this guy before.
Mm.
He is no joke, you know, and absolutely he's a top part. So, you know, I just hope that Jamil doesn't get hurt seriously, you know, because he is a nice guy. But maybe after this fight, he would finally say, you know what, I quit. you know, I'm getting out of the game. You know, I did all I can do. Because, you know, I just don't want to see nobody get hurt at that stage, you know, because, I mean, you know, he's done all he can do. You know, he's had his prime. Now his prime is over. I mean, leave it to those guys. Let those guys do this, you know, now. You know, now he needs to move on with his life. You know, Jameer's a smart guy, you know, very smart guy, you know, and
yep.
I know he has other businesses out there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I know he don't need to do this. But, you know, I think he just wanted to try to give it one last shot. I just hope he doesn't get seriously injured and that he'll be able to continue on with his life.
Yeah, so we wish him the best of luck, and that's going to be in the co-main event in Moscow, Russia. Co-main event of the Vitaly Klitschko Manuel Char main event. But we look on the other side of the world, and my goodness, we still have a ton of boxing. I mean, Andre Ward versus Chad Dawson. Now, we know that this is your favorite fight of the weekend, and how can it not be? This is the best fight of the best. The best at 175, fighting the best at 168. And, you know, this past Tuesday, we had the pleasure of speaking with Iceman Scully, Chad Dawson's trainer, and he said that Chad Dawson, like he knew he was going to beat Bernard Hopkins, knows that he's going to defeat Andre Ward. Kind of hard to imagine right now, isn't it, Ronnie?
Well, it's kind of hard to imagine for me, you know, because, you know, I'm just a huge Andre Ward fan, you know, and like I said, and I was able to go, I was, fortunately, I had a guy fight Andre Ward, and that's when I was training Stocky Omeka, and Andre proved a lot to me in that fight, you know, and
mm-hmm.
You know, just a lot, but in all of his fights, he really impresses me because this guy, he's very serious about boxing. You know, and I just wish all of the young guys could just take a look at this guy. Just take a look at this guy. Look how he handles himself. Look how he trains. Look the way he fights. He doesn't back down from anybody, you know. So, you know, I'm really, really high on Andre Ward. But I'm also high on Chad Dawson. You know, Chad Dawson,
mm-hmm.
really a fighter. You know, I just think, you know, when you look at the fight, you know, and you just look at all the intangibles that go with it, you know, I just see Andre Ward just being a step ahead of him, you know. But, you know, Chad Dawson can easily win this fight, and it's going to be a great fight. This is kind of the kind of fight that boxing needs right now. And, man, we have some bomb burners coming up, though. Wow.
That's right. So, Ronnie, I mean, there's so many sleeper bouts here. You know, we haven't even discussed, you know, we haven't even discussed Tomas Adamek versus Travis the Freight Train Walker, Brian Jennings versus Chris Koval, Steve Cunningham versus Jason Gabbard in heavyweight. Cunningham's making his – dude, the SS Cunningham is making his heavyweight debut. Now,
yeah,
Ronnie, is this a good idea? Because Cunningham, he's a friend of the show, great guy, but he's had some chin problems at cruiserweight. Is this a good idea for him to be campaigning at heavyweight, man?
Yeah, but, you know, but at some time, you know, at some point, you know, this guy's been a cruiserweight all his life. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, all his boxing life, he's just been a cruiserweight. So, you know, look, sometimes you have to test the waters. And, you know, of course he has chin problems, but, you know, but he does have a lot of skill. You know,
He's got a lot of skills. And, boy, he's got a lot of heart and mental toughness. I mean, whenever
absolutely.
You see this guy work, he's got the power.
Absolutely.
He's got the athleticism. He's got the skill. And he has the mental makeup to succeed at any level. It's going to be interesting
absolutely.
To see if he can do it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's you know, but I think it's a great move by him to test the heavyweight market. You know, I really and truly do because, you know, although he's not going to be a big heavyweight, but, you know, his athleticism is going to be really, really – he's going to give a lot of guys a lot of problems just because of his athleticism, you know. And, you know, and he can compete with anybody, man, you know. And he just can't take big shots, so, you know. He got to stay away from it, avoid the big shots, and I think he's going to do fine.
Well, I know why he's moving up in weight. He wants to actually either get a rematch with Thomas Adamek, the rematch he never received, or he
right.
wants the bout that always evaded him, and I'm not sure it's a good idea. And that's against the haymaker, David Haye. Now, if I'm Cunningham's manager, I want to keep him far away from David Haye, Ronnie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, but then again, he's a competitor, though, you know? I mean, he's a competitor.
God bless him for it.
this is what boxing is all about, though. You know, boxing is, you know, it's pitting the best against the best, you know? And although I think Haye would knock him out, I just think that, you know, I don't know. You know, it depends on what his confidence level would be during that fight. He has to beat some quality fighters first in order to have the confidence to go in with a guy like David Haye again. You know,
mm-hmm.
and you know, but I don't know. But he has skill level to do it, though. You know, that's the thing. I don't think you turn away from that, you know. Although David Haye is a very skilled fighter, you know, I think David Haye is going to rule the heavyweight division after the Klitschko's leave. You know, I think it's going to be David Haye. I really and truly do. If he gets his act together, though, you know.
His performance against Chisora was absolutely brilliant.
Yes.
You know, it was... it was very impressive. And after that, you pretty much have to like him against every other heavyweight in the division except for the Klitschkos.
Yep, absolutely.
But since we only have about 8 minutes left, moving on, brother, let me ask you this. Before we actually, you know, talk about any other fights on September 8th, which there are so many that I love, Lucas Matisse versus Jose Aluzagin. That's a sleeper fight, and that's, you know, I love seeing Lucas Matisse fight. This guy is a killer. You know, but I also love, quite honestly, Antonio DeMarco versus John Molina. What a great fight that is. Oh.
That's great.
This is all happening on one day, man.
I really like DeMarco, man. I really like this kid. I mean, he showed me a lot, man. He showed me a lot. But I also like John Molina, you know. I mean, I like him too. You know, but I just think DeMarco might be a little bit too much for him at this stage.
Ooh, boy, it's going to be a great fight, guys. And it is happening at the Oracle Arena in Oakland.
Oakland, California.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great, great fight card right there. You know, And then you also have Deontay Wilder fighting again in Costa Mesa.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Wow. You also see the turn of Demetrius Hopkins on that undercard and a kid who I'm really high on, lightweight Luis Ramos Jr.
Oh, yeah. He's fighting. I forgot about him.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. There's so many great fights. But, you know, before we actually end your segment, we've got about 6-7 minutes left. I want to get your thoughts, Ronnie, on what did you think of the face-off and the 24-7 between Sergio Martinez, Chavez Jr. Who has the advantage after watching both of those broadcasts?
Well, you know, here's the thing, you know, I mean, I think you have to go by activity when it comes to big fights, you know. And I must say, man, Cowboys has done a great job with Chavez Jr. In his activity level. He's been really busy. But Martinez, he haven't been busy, you know. And this is the reason I'm picking Chavez Jr., because he's been very, very active. And, Martinez, I love Sergio Martinez. I love the way he fights, you know.
Uh-huh.
He's a guy who holds his power to the end, you know, and that's rare in boxing, you know. And I know you know that it's rare for a guy to be just as strong from the beginning to the end. But I think with Martinez, though, with the pressure that Chavez Jr. is going to put on Martinez,
that he haven't had that kind of pressure before early. You know what I'm saying? Early, he like to take it. You know, Martinez like to sit back, take his time, and he'd have to get you into the late rounds, and boom, then knock you out. I think it's going to be the opposite. I think Chavez Jr. has to put the pressure on him early, and he will put the pressure on him early. He's going to lose a few rounds early, but I think you know, the first six rounds is going to be real close. But then I don't think Martinez is going to be able to hold that power to the end like he been doing everybody else, just because Chavez is going to be a big guy that night. It's going to be the biggest guy he's ever fought. You know, I mean, this guy is going to be no less than 180 pounds that night.
That's my goodness.
I'm telling you that. That's huge, man. Martinez is not going to be 106 pounds. He may be 162 pounds. That's a lot of weight in front of you.
Oh, my goodness, Roddy. I tell you what.
That's a lot of weight in front of you.
Oh, my goodness. Now, if you could please enlighten the listening audience and let them know what the difference is. I mean, you're as knowledgeable as it gets in boxing. I mean, I spoke with Emmanuel last weekend up in Detroit, and he says you're one of his favorite trainers. And he also told me that you were an outstanding amateur fighter. He said, oh, you should have seen Ronnie fight in the amateurs. Woo! So Emmanuel thinks really highly of you, you know, as we all do, Ronnie. So I want to get your expertise. Even though Sergio Martinez has fought big, tough guys that like to apply pressure,
right,
like Kelly Pavlik, like Paul Williams, what is the difference between a fighter like Chavez Jr. and Kelly Pavlik and Paul Williams? What's going to be the biggest difference to Sergio Martinez?
Well, I think here's the biggest difference, the power. You know, see, here's the thing. Chavez Jr. is a skilled fighter now. You know, I think Freddie Roach and Chavez Sr. together have really, really instilled in this guy the confidence that he needs to win these fights. You know, because, like I said, when he fought Andale, everybody now picked Andale. You know, I thought Andale was going to outbox him.
Me too.
I really did. He outboxed him the first few rounds. But the pressure that this kid, the pressure, and then, you know, the guy takes a good punch. You know, when you take a good punch like that, you know, that even gives you more confidence. But he has power. The kid can punch. And that's the difference between you fighting a 154-pounder or you fighting a 147-pounder. You know, these guys are going to both weigh in 160. But one guy is going to put on 20 pounds, the other guy is going to put on 5. Okay? I mean, this guy is going to look so much bigger. I mean, I'm telling you, people are going to look at these guys and say, wow, are they the same weight? I'm telling you, when people look at these guys, they're going to say, oh, my God, look at this guy.
And, well, I tell you what, Ronnie, the only thing I'm really afraid of that Chavez Jr. isn't going to be able to make weight, and it jeopardizes the fight on September 15th. Wouldn't that be just like boxing, Ronnie?
But you know what? Let me tell you something. On any other time, I would say, but you know, you may be right, that he may not make the weight. But let me tell you, this kid is going to make the weight. If they got to cut one of his legs off, this kid is going to make the weight. You got to understand the significance of this fight, okay? You got to understand. Golden Boy is putting on a fight that night also. Remember, this is Mexican Independence Weekend, okay?
That's right.
This means a lot to these guys. This, you know, you're talking about the heart and soul now of these guys. You know, this is why Alvarez, you know, Canelo Alvarez had to fight on this day. This day means a lot. You know, to all the Mexican people, it means a lot. And Chavez Jr. is not going to screw that up. You know, because it's too much. There's too much out there. It's too much for him to lose, you know, if he doesn't fight on this day, if he doesn't make his weight on that day. It's too much for him to lose. If he loses the title on the scale,
so many people are going to be so disappointed because those tickets are selling like hotcakes for his fight. Okay?
You're right.
So he has to make weight on that day. Trust me.
Well, I tell you what, Ronnie, we've got 15 seconds left in your segment prediction. Who's going to win this fight, Ronnie?
Chavez Jr. by unanimous decision.
Wow. The incomparable Mr. Ronnie Shields. Ronnie, your segment always just flies by, brother. My goodness. We're going to have a special show dedicated to your boxing insight, my friend.
I'm waiting on it. I'm waiting on it.
Well, I tell you what, look for the article, guys, featuring the grand opening of Ronnie's gym in Sugarland, Texas, Plex Boxing, powered by Ronnie Shields. Ronnie, it's always an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the Pugilist Corner, sir.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a great night.
You too, sir. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
I love hearing Ronnie's insight, man. But, guys, coming up, we have another special treat. Master fight strategist and expert trainer, Mr. James Gogi. James is going to be discussing all of this past weekend's action, plus he's going to be analyzing future events as well. Mr. King, do we have James Gogi on the line at this time? Well, I guess we're still waiting on Mr. Gogi to be on the show. But as soon as he's on, our faithful producer will let us know. So I tell you what, guys, one of the things that I really love about talking to Mr. James Gogi is his attention to specific detail for any fighter. Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry, I caught you in between words there, but proper introductions, please.
Oh, guys, this is the moment I've been waiting for personally. Guys, it's always a real treat to speak with master fight strategist, expert trainer, Mr. James Gogi. James, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Hey, Joe, how you doing? How's everybody going out there? Doing out there?
Well, I tell you what, brother, this is an exciting time. I cannot wait for all of these fights to happen on September 8th. It almost seemed like last night was a big teaser, the appetizer, if you will, didn't it?
That's a good way of saying it, Joe. I never thought about it like that. That's correct.
Oh, my gosh. And what an appetizer it was. Gennady Golovkin. He is a killer. Your thoughts? What impressed you the most, James, about Gennady Golovkin's performance against a very tough, awkward fighter?
Physical strength and his heavy hand and his punching power. Boy, every time he hit that guy with a shot, that guy was hurt. I mean, I haven't seen a guy like this in a long time, just coming in there, on HBO, living up to all the hype that was given to him, and he lived up to all the hype. And his tremendous body punching, his punching power and his physical strength, but his technical precision, the way he did it. So, like I said, he was heavy hype coming into this fight, and he lived up to all the advertisement and everything. And that Golovkin, he's going to be a force to reckon with in that red hot junior middleweight or super middleweight division. Boy, that guy, he's going to create some noise in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Gennady he looks to be the class of the middleweight division, other than, the Sergio Martinez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. The obvious winner is going to come out to the number one ranked middleweight in the world and the universally recognized 160-pound champion. But how do either one of these guys fare against a beast like Gennady Golovkin?
They better not get hit by him. If they do, like that. You're going to get hit. This guy, that's what impresses me about this guy. It's just his, the way he just physically grinds on you, with good technical skills, how he just wears you down. And then, once he starts landing them, the big short, that short little short right hook, looping overhand right he has is vicious. That left hook, he throws them body shots, some uppercuts. Oh, You know, he's got different weapons in his arsenal that he throws at you, and all of them, oh, God, every single shot he can hit you with, whether it's that uppercut, the body shot, the little short little looping right hook, he can hurt you with. The guy, God, he just got heavy hands. You know, he's like he's got a pair of, you know, a pair of quarters. A roll of quarters in his hands when he hits you.
Well, he's got something in his fist, that's for sure. You know,
yeah.
And guys, don't take that the wrong way. I mean, come on. You know, I was just thinking, as soon as it came out of my mouth, there's going to be some of our listeners, man, who's going to be thinking that we're implying something that isn't there. Guys,
nah.
Don't be thinking that we're implying that he is up to no good, because that's ridiculous.
That's just God-given pure talent, ability. You know, his physical strength and his punching power. You either have it or you don't. And you know, God just happened to bless him. And one of the you know, he's one of the rare fighters out there that are blessed with that, you know, that special talent.
You know, James. You know, I was speaking with Emmanuel Stewart last weekend in Detroit, and he actually stated a guy like Tommy Hearns. He's got world-class sick power that you just can't teach in the gym. Is that the case with a guy like Hearns or like Golovkin? You just can't teach that kind of power.
God either gave it to you or he didn't. It's just like a, you know, it's just like an NFL running back. Hey, you either run a 4.3 or 4.4, you don't. You know, God either gave you that ability or he didn't. And you know, that punching power is God-given. It's a talent. It's a rare talent that God only gives it a certain amount of people and everything. But, you know, like I said, he has that punching ability, but it is his technical skills behind it. You know, that amateur pedigree he has behind him. You know, all them international fights, competing in the Olympics, you know, going against the top talent, you know, the top talent in the amateurs, different styles in the amateurs, you know what I mean? It taught him how to be a very composed and very seasoned fighter, you know. You know, if he didn't have, early in his career, if he would have started with like I say, American promoter, they would have moved him faster. He would have been a huge superstar by now, you know. But he had I think he had manager problems, and he was out a year and a half. And you know, he was always fighting in Europe, so people over here didn't know about him and everything. But he would have came right out of the Olympics, the 2004 Olympics, where you know where he won a silver medal. He would have came right to the States. Oh, he would have been a superstar by now. Without a doubt, with that kind of ability, without a doubt, he would have been a big hit right now. But right now, he opened the door. He kicked the door open. So let's see what happens and how he progresses.
Well, it's going to be interesting. After the fight, I remarked about this during the very first segment of the show. I actually remarked about, I thought it was really interesting, that Gennady Golovkin, he stated that, well, if no one wants to fight me at 160, I can always move up to 168 and fight the winner of Dawson Andre Ward. I thought that was extremely interesting. It showed the mental toughness and physical toughness of this guy from Kazakhstan. What were your thoughts, and is this a realistic possibility, James?
When you could punch like that, you're always going to be in the ball game, okay? He has the power to go up to 168 and then knock people out and everything. So, and he has the technical skills, the physical strength, you know, and the amateur background, you know, because of all the different styles he faces in amateur, you know, to give him that experience he needs to compete at with the top boys at the 168 pound division and everything. With Wandre Ward, Mikhail Kessler, Carl Froch, Lucien Boutte. Hey, I think he'll knock out Lucien Boutte. You know, the Lucien Boutte's, you know, his chin ain't, you know, it's not the best in the world. And this guy hits good luck. Good. You know what I mean? You know?
You know, absolutely. I tell you what, though, it's going to be really interesting to see the way K2 actually guides Gennady Golovkin's career after being on HBO, after making his premiere in the United States. Let me ask you this. We saw Gil defeat Felix Sturm yesterday to win the WBA 160-pound championship. That's the super WBA title, okay?
Yeah.
And he already possessed the IBF middleweight championship. He's a two-title champion, okay? Two-belt champion.
Hold on, he won that WBA super title?
Yep, he won the super WBA middleweight title. Okay.
What the heck is that? I thought what's the name of the champion? Golovkin.
Golovkin is the regular WBA 160-pound champion. But my point is, this leaves Golovkin the next opponent, theoretically, for Daniel Gill. Do you see Gill taking this fight?
They throw a lot of money at him. That's the only way he's going to take this fight. He'll get knocked out too. So, I think they're going to milk it. And I don't know. I heard Gill's boy. He's from Australia. So you know,
yeah,
I'm
he's from down under.
Himself.
That's right.
Yeah, I'd milk it over there. Let him defend his titles like, what do you call it, Danny Boy Green did. You know, let him make some money over there. Let him buy, you know, having that belt over there, you know, he'll draw big crowds over there. And let him milk it over there, make some money, then go after, then get that fight with Golovkin. But that'd be, you know, he would be a champion much longer. I don't know if he fought Golovkin right off the bat to defend it and everything.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how long he actually has with the WBA to defend his title. Because ultimately, the WBA super actually has to defend that title against the regular WBA champion if he wants to keep it. So it's going to be interesting to see how long that sanctioning body allows him to carry the title, how many defenses, how many voluntary defenses they allow him to have before he has to defend that title against Gennady Golovkin. Very interesting, and we can't wait to see how that unfolds. But, you know, also, there was another fighter that actually had a big, big fight. And let me tell you, Mikey Garcia looked outstanding yesterday, you know, against a very tough guy, but he is very long in the tooth, Mauricio Pastrana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, James, in your opinion, is Mikey Garcia ready for the big time, and who do you want to see him fight?
Yeah, Mikey Garcia is ready. Yeah, like I said, he's been a pro, what, 7, going on 8 years? He's more than ready. You know, the reason why they took his time, because he didn't have that big amateur background like, say, Golovkin or Andre Ward, Darrell, and them guys where he, you know, he had 100, 150 fights. He only had, like, maybe 40 amateur fights and everything. So, you know, Bruce Trapler, you know, the brains behind Top Rank when he's developing these guys, him and Brad Goodman is, you know, his matchmaker. You know, they make sure when they put their fighters in big fights, okay, they make sure they're seasoned totally, meaning they face different styles. They make, you know, right-handed, left-handers, punchers, awkward fighters, and, you know, they don't rush it. You know, they do it just like Russell Peltz and Don Targan. You know, they when they take a guy, they make sure they're totally seasoned before they put him into big fights. And, yeah, Mikey Garcia, this is going to be his year to fight for a title. Yeah, and I really believe, you know, they're talking about, you know, Orlando Salido since, you know, the top, you know, that top ranked guy. So I really believe that fight is going to happen for that WBO title. I think it's going to be a very, very good scrap.
Wow. You know, I hope that materializes sometime soon because that's going to be an excellent fight. Now, in your expert opinion, James, who wins that fight and why?
Ooh, that's a barn burner. Golly, Mikey Garcia, boy. That's Salido. He's a very intelligent fighter. You know, not only is he a good pressure fighter with a solid chin, and he throws punches from all different angles, the looping, the overhand rights, the hooks, the uppercuts, the body shots. Ooh, that Garcia boy, that's going to be a very, very tough fight for him and everything. And, you know, he's going to have, you know, his defense is going to have to be on, because if he gets hit by them shots, boy, it's going to be lights out, just like Juan Manuel Lopez and everything. And he's going to have to, you know, just pretty much fight this fight at long range, be very technical, you know what I mean, be very precise, making sure you know, making sure his punches count and everything, like he always does. You know, he's not a guy, kind of guy that fights like a typical Mexican fighter that just goes in there and mixes it up. There's a meaning behind everything he does. Okay, he works off that jab, good fundamentally sound fighter, trained by his dad Eduardo, who's, you know, one of the better trainers out there that doesn't get the recognition and everything, who trains ferocious Fernando Vargas and his son right now, his famous son right now, that Robert Garcia. And his dad instilled solid fundamentals in his kids, especially Mikey and everything. You watch him, and he is fundamentally sound, offensively and defensively, takes his time, picks the shots. All his, every punch he has, it means something. I tell you what, when he fights Salido, boy, Salido's going to try to, you know, make him fight his fight, which is a high-volume fight. So it's going to be a shootout and everything. It's going to be a shootout because I know Salido can take his punch. We got to see if Garcia can take Salido's punch. Okay, that's going to be the battle of the chins. See, you know, the battle of the chins and everything. Who could take each other's punch?
Well, we hope that materializes sometime soon. But I tell you what, moving on, James, we have so much to discuss. First of all, this is a huge fight weekend next weekend, September 8th. So much going on, but we know you have a sleeper fight and that it is your favorite matchup of the weekend. Which fight do you actually look forward to watching the most?
DeMarco, Antonio DeMarco and John Molina. That fight is going to be it's not getting the publicity like the other fights this weekend, but that fight has a potentially the fight of the year because of the styles. DeMarco, good boxer, brawler, technical fighter. A Molina, you know, heavy-handed puncher, could take you out at any time and everything. Now he's back with Joe Goosen, so I know Joe Goosen, one of the best, a good friend of mine, one of the, you know, better trainers out there in the world. He's going to have him ready and everything, and not only physically, mentally, but technically. And DeMarco, you know, he always comes and gives a good fight. So it's going to be a barn burner. And let me tell you this. If this guy, Molina, hits DeMarco with that little looping overhand right he throws, or a little short right hook he throws like Golovkin throws, good night. He's going to knock him out because this Molina can punch. He can punch. And it's going to be a hell of a fight. It's going to be a hell of a fight. And that's the fight you should tune into. It's going to be on what network
HBO.
Is that going to be on, Joe?
It's going to be on the
HBO,
triple header.
Yeah,
it's going to be in the
fight.
Co-main event.
Yeah, yeah. That's the fight, people. If you want to see a good action fight that's going to give you, you know, your entertainment value, that's it. That's going to be because I know Joe Goosen. I know this guy's going to be ready, and I know DeMarco's going to be ready. And, you know, it's going to be a battle of wills, heart, skill, and chin. Who has a better chin? Because DeMarco doesn't hit as hard as this Molina, because that Molina can hit. Oh, he can punch. He's one of them guys like Golovkin. One punch can change the game. You know what I mean? I love punchers, and that's what Molina brings to the table. He doesn't have the technical skills as good as DeMarco, but he makes it up with his, you know, his power in both hands that God gave him. And he's a big lightweight. What is he, 5'11"? Oh, God. 5'10", 5'11"? Yeah, he's a big lightweight. So I don't know how he makes weight, but he makes it. So it's going to be interesting, that fight.
Wow, and it's happening, guys, September 8th at the Oracle Arena in the co-main event, Oakland, California. But, you know, James, there was also in boxing news, and I spoke about it at the top of the hour briefly, but I really wanted to get your insight on this. Amir Khan's in the news once again. He is interviewing fight trainers. And I was talking about how, you know, I'm really sick and tired of hearing these fighters, you know, blame all of their mishaps in the ring on their fight trainers. First of all, do you feel that Freddie Roach gets too much of the blame here? And who do you think, you know, if Amir Khan decides to leave Freddie Roach, who do you think would be the best fit for Amir Khan? And what are some of the deficiencies that he has to overcome?
Trainers always get the blame. Every time a fighter loses, the first thing they look at is the coach. And no different from the NFL. As soon as the team loses, who do they always look at? The coach. And who gets fired first? The coach. NBA, the same thing. As soon as you lose, who do they look at? The coach. Who gets fired first? The coach. It always goes back to the coach, okay? And it's the same thing in boxing. You know, every time a fighter, you know, loses, they always look at the coach. They always look at the trainer. So, you know, we're, you know, us trainers out there, we're probably the most underappreciated, individuals in the sport, you know, in this tough business and everything. You know, because when the fighters win, it's the fighters get the glory. You know, coach is secondary, you know. But you know, as far as just getting the coach, and there's a lot of great coaches out there, you know, and there's a lot of great coaches out there that don't have names, you know, that are not well-known. You know, if you give them a chance, you know, they could be well-known coaches and everything. And I was reading something on what Frank Warren said, I think, a few weeks ago. He was saying that, you know, boxing, you know, he was talking about how hot boxing is in England, and he was saying that, you know, he's tired of hearing these fighters from England telling them, "Oh, I got to go to America. I got to go to America to make a name." And he's talking. He's tired of hearing, about the trainers in England are not as good as the trainers in America. He was saying that there's a lot of good trainers in England that are just as good or better than the trainers here in America, and I agree with him. You know, you can find a coach out there that will just teach him, you know, to correct the deficiencies he has, which is basically most of them defensive. You know, he gets hit by a lot of right hands. He gets hit by, you know, left hooks. When he's in the pocket, when he's exchanging, his hands are low. You know, and that's simple stuff like that. Just to, you know, simple fundamental stuff like that. Just to, you know, polish up his defense, to polish up his defensive deficiencies. But you know, you don't want to change his offense. I mean, he's got great footwork, fast and, you know, fast, quick feet. He's got an explosive left jab, the best in boxing. He throws fast, sharp, crisp, precision combinations. He has power in both hands. You know, God given. You know what I mean? All he has to do is just find a coach, you know, just to polish, keep that intact, but just polish up his defensive game and teach him a little bit about fighting inside at a close range, because he is totally deficient in that area. He has, now Lamont Peterson, you know, showed that, exposed him on that. When he got inside, he didn't know what to do. So just, you know, you don't have to make him 100% better defensive fighter. I mean, you don't have to make him a better 100% offensive or defensive fighter on the inside. Just make him 25% better. So he does have some, you know, basic skills on how to fight it on the inside. Then you take it back on the outside. You know what I mean? Because his game, 80-90% of his game is going to be at long range. But when he's on the inside, you know, you can see his deficiencies. So you teach him the basic fundamentals to fight inside, then let him go back outside to doing his thing. But it ain't going to take much. This guy's a thoroughbred already. All you got to do is just polish him up. You know, his mindset, you know, Amir, you know, he had a good attitude after his loss. You know, he, you know, a lot of fighters, they lose. What do? They go into hiding for 3 months. You don't see him. But, you know, he was back in the limelight, you know, at the Olympics, doing interviews and this and that. So I don't think the loss from Danny Garcia affected him that much. He's going to come back stronger. And, you know, you just got to get a coach that's going to spend 110% with him all the time, like a lot of these coaches do, where they only have one elite fighter, like Pablo Saramonte, the guy that trains Sergio Martinez. He's with them all the time. He don't have a lot of fighters. And that's what he's going to have to do, is get one a good, fundamentally sound trainer that's going to spend, 110% of his time with them.
Yeah, you know, Pablo Sarmiento, though, out of the Oxnard gym, you know, you're absolutely right. That's his bread and butter right now. We see him actually with other fighters like Mago, the big heavyweight, is going to be fighting Jamil McClain. Also, yeah. Javier Fortuna, he's got him as well, and he's doing a
Definitely.
Great job with that young featherweight. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, his Manny Pacquiao is Sergio Martinez. So, you know, if Amir Khan wants that kind of attention, well, then you might as well already rule out the possibility of him working with someone like Robert Garcia, Pablo Sarmiento, Manuel Stewart, which was a big rumor a couple weeks ago. You know, there's no way that Emmanuel Stewart is going to have the time to devote to a guy like Amir Khan when he's training the best heavyweight on the planet.
Yeah.
There's no way. So what you would recommend is just get a competent, proficient local trainer there, a guy who's going to be willing to devote all of his waking moments with him training Amir Khan.
Not only locally, but maybe in the U.S. or, you know, just someone that's going to you know, Amir's got to, be comfortable with. Someone that's going to, you know, not change his style. Someone that's going to accentuate his style, but, you know, improve his defensive deficiencies and everything. You ain't got to improve a lot on this guy. He's a horse ready to run for the Triple Crown, okay? You just got to.
You're absolutely right.
You know?
And Emmanuel Stewart actually stated that right after the fight. He didn't get to state that on the air because he gets muted quite a bit on HBO. But, you know, he stated that. He said, look, I don't see where Amir Khan really did anything wrong. He just got caught with a good shot. You know, he's a guy who had the mindset of really going out and knocking out his opponent but got caught in the process. And he's like, I don't see where that's a bad thing. But, you know, Emmanuel always loves a knockout, and he always loves a fighter who's willing to take chances in the ring.
You know what, Joe? There is probably trainers in England that, you know, you give them the opportunity, they could get the job done. I prefer an experienced trainer because, you know, a guy that's been around a while that never got the recognition of being a great coach, you know, but he has that experience. He has that background. He knows what to do at the right moments in a mere career. You know, a guy with experience will know that. A guy learning on the job, forget about that. A guy learning on the job ain't gonna cut it. Not with a guy. You're gonna need a guy with that's been around a while that knows the game, that knows the fundamentals, that knows the mere strength, and that's not gonna change him and everything. And just correct his defensive deficiencies and add a little bit to his inside game, and that's all, you know. And but there's a lot. I really believe what Frank Warren said. You know, there's a lot of good coaches out there, but they just don't get coaches in England that don't get the recognition like American coaches.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see who Amir Khan actually chooses if he does in fact leave Freddie Roach in the wild card gym. But you know, we only have a couple minutes left, James. Your segment always flies by, but I'd like to get your thoughts on a matchup that was just announced a couple of days ago. Miguel Cotto just selected his dance partner for December 1st in Madison Square Garden, and quite honestly, I was actually surprised. This is the current regular WBA champion, 54, Austin No Doubt Trout. James, is this a bad idea for Miguel Cotto?
Man, all the fighters, you know, you're getting a guy that's a southpaw with mobility, with athletic ability, that's sharp, that's sharp and crisp and fast. Yeah, hey, that's a hard style to beat and everything, you know what I mean? That's going to be a hard style to beat. I thought there'd be other guys to pick, but why go after that guy for? You know what I mean?
Well, because he has the title. He has the title and he was available.
How about K-9 Bundridge?
You know, I was a little surprised. I was a little surprised that he didn't go after K-9, but if you look at Miguel Cotto's past, he's always been loyal to the WBA.
Yeah.
He's been the WBA champion as a junior welterweight, as a welterweight, and as a junior middleweight. So I think that's what really went into his decision-making. He saw that Austin Trout, the regular WBA champion, was available, and he decided to stay loyal to the sanctioning body. But I tell you what, though, this is a very, very awkward style matchup. I'm sorry, James, finish the show, man. We have about a minute left, sir. Take us out, brother.
He's fighting in Madison Square Garden. All his fans are going to be there cheering him on, so he's going to be fighting 100% better. And Austin Trout, let me tell you, he goes there just to, you know, try to outpoint him. He's gonna leave the Madison Square Garden without that belt. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, it is going to be interesting, guys, and we cannot wait to feature Mr. Austin Trout on this week's episode of the Pugilist Corner. It's going to be happening this Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. And again, we're going to be featuring the current regular WBA junior middleweight champion Austin Trout. We're also going to be featuring Mr. Edwin Rodriguez on Tuesday's show, and we're going to be discussing a very, very interesting topic with Mr. Buddy McGirt. He's also going to be on the show. But, James, it is always a pleasure to feature you on the Weekend Wrap, the Pugilist Corner. And I tell you what, is it a possibility, James, can you co-host the show with me this Tuesday night?
Okay, can I let you know tomorrow, Joe?
Absolutely, my friend. Just let me know if you're going to be able to co-host, sir. But I tell you what, it's always a pleasure to feature you on the Pugilist Corner's Weekend Wrap. So thank you so much for being on this episode, sir.
Oh, Joe, like I said, you're the best. I mean, you're the one that makes this show go so smooth, you and James, and golly, it's so, when you're on this show, it makes boxing so fun, it makes it so easy. You put boxing down in simplistic terms where it's entertaining to our listening audience. So thank you.
Thank you, James. I appreciate that, my friend. But I tell you what, man, it's going to be – I'm just really happy that August is finally over and done with, my friend.
Yeah. We're going to get up.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we've got a huge tripleheader on HBO. Andre Ward versus Chad Dawson. That's going to be in the main event. The return of Vitali Klitschko. Your favorite fight, your sleeper fight of the night, and possible fight of the year candidate, Antonio DeMarco versus John Molina. Then we also have on the other network, on Showtime, that's going to be Lucas Matheisa versus Alize Luzigan, as well as on the East Coast, it's going to be Tomas Adamek versus Travis Walker. A full weekend of action, and I tell you what, I can't wait to see it. But James, for sure, we'll be talking to you next Sunday on the Weekend Wrap. Thank you so much for being on the show,
my
brother.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mr. King, it's about that time, brother. Take us home.
Hey. Thank all our guests tonight. Mr. Shields, as usual, a little straight talk with Mr. Ronnie Shields. Mr. James Googie's Breakdown. Of course, having our host back, Mr. O'Hare. Good show, and we'll see you next week on the Weekend Wrap, and don't forget to see us Tuesday on the Pugilist Corner. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.